Sunshine, downtown Chicago. Blue skies, what a lovely day. We've got nice weather all week long. Is that why you decided to come downtown, Elise Kling?
Absolutely, John.
Yeah, the city is shining this morning. Elise is in our studio. You hear her regularly Mondays from thinkglink.com and Best Money Moves. You have been paying attention to the cost of the hurricane. What are you finding?
Oh, my gosh. This is going to be a whopper. It's not going to be quite as bad as I think some. But if you're in the middle of it, we don't know for sure what it'll cost yet. But Moody's Analytics is predicting $15 to $26 billion in damage, plus an additional $5 to $8 billion in lost economic output. And I'm pretty sure that those estimates are going to go up.
And much of that, I guess, will be borne by the insurance companies?
Yeah, they will be, and a lot of it will not. And so this is the problem when homeowners don't have flood insurance. So what's going to end up happening is that most of the coverage is going to deem to be, or most of the people's houses are going to deem to be not be covered by their insurance, because insurance doesn't cover you for the rising body of water, rising floods. So if a tree hits your house and then your house floods, you would be covered, right? Which is fine. But when you have a rising tide of water, like these heavy-duty rains, and then they've got rivers that surges and rivers flood, and they come into your house and they sweep away buildings, none of that generally is covered.
Well, people in Florida are having trouble getting coverage anyway, or at least the coverage is very expensive, right?
It is. It's outrageously expensive. In some places around Florida, it's tripled over just the last couple of years. In some cases, just the last year. And in Florida, you've got a whole bunch of other stuff going on with what happened at with the building collapse and the new law that went into effect January 1st, that condos need to now have enough money in reserves to cover all the potential things that are going wrong. There's something like 30,000 new condos on the market in Florida.
Really? 30,000 new condos on the market, people who don't want them now.
Correct. Not new, like brand new builders just put them out.
Oh, I see.
I mean people who can't.
Yeah,
new listings. They can't afford their houses anymore. What I think is going to happen, though, is, and this is kind of interesting, we've seen the pictures of the bridges just getting washed away in North Carolina. Tennessee has had areas cut off, towns completely wiped off the map. I think what we're going to end up seeing is a lot of these areas, which were not previously considered in floodable areas, they didn't think they were in flood zones. I think we're going to see a new redrawing of the flood zones, and these people may also have trouble getting homeowners insurance going forward.
You can't blame somebody for living in Tennessee. But I wonder if there's going to come a point where we say, if your house is built on stilts because of the surf or the surge, then maybe that's on you, that the state or the federal government or even State Farm should not have an obligation to cover you. It's buyer beware.
It would be nice if these people went out and got actual flood insurance from FEMA, you know, the floodsmart.gov.
Oh, they can do that?
They can go and get flood insurance from the federal government. It only covers up to, I think, $250,000. But, hey, that's $250,000 better than zero, and you don't have a house, furnishings, cars, or anything else. By the way, that's the other thing that's gone up dramatically in value and cost, car insurance. So the car insurers are getting faster at sort of handing over money for the cars that are lost due to the floods or the hurricanes or whatever. And then it's hard to get new car insurance, or that car insurance might double or treble as well.
Wow. You know, and I've heard from people, everybody flees Illinois and Indiana and the Midwest, and they retire in Florida, move to Florida. It's less expensive and the weather's better and all that jazz. And I get that. But if you sell your house in Indiana, I'm thinking of a caller we had a couple of years ago, and you take all of the equity. So you own your house outright. You take your $300,000 and you go buy a place in Florida, but you can't afford the insurance.
Yeah.
And then the hurricane wipes it out. And now you have no equity and you have no place to live.
Yeah, it's really troublesome. I mean, just this week we saw pictures of houses that are falling into the ocean in, I think it was South Carolina. You're seeing people, you know, watch as their properties get closer and closer to the ocean. They haven't fallen in yet, but they probably will. There are some houses like that on the market. I'm not sure I would take that risk. It's interesting. Zillow introduced this week First Street, which is a kind of a comprehensive climate change. Climate measurement, climate risk assessment kind of a company,
First
data
Street,
company.
FIRST, First Street.
Yeah, and Zillow is partnering with them to create a climate risk data standard for financial modeling. What they've done is now layer that over for sale properties in the U.S., and it's going to give you some insights into five key risks that you might face no matter where you live in the country. Flood, wildfire, wind, heat, and air quality, and all of it coming along with the listing, so you can take a look at risk scores, interactive maps, and insurance requirements.
Well, that would affect the price of the home if I said, well, let's pull up this Zillow Risk First Street metric, and now I'm failing on five of the eight. Maybe that house is worth less.
I think that's right. I think you're going to want to bid less because the risks going forward might be so much higher.
And we're not insulated completely here. I guess we'd be susceptible to tornadoes, wind, heat is at least uncomfortable, if not a fire hazard. I suppose some of those would layer on us in the Midwest, right?
I think so. I mean, we've got, you know, I'm going to be a Chicago booster. I've lived here my whole life, right, John? So, I mean, I'm just going to say, hey, we're a great place, and it's a beautiful day, and we've got fresh water. So yeah. Come check us out.
Well, and I guess if you live near one of the rivers, if you're too close to the riverbed, you're in a flood zone, right?
Well, we're getting big rains here. So one of the things that Chicago is at risk for, and they did redraw the flood maps over the last couple of years, just remember how the Des Plaines River flooded, broke its banks, flooded up, and got some houses. Now, you're not seeing anything washed away by our rivers, thank God, but it's can be scary no matter where you live.
Elise Glink's in our studio from Think Glink Media. What else is on your radar? You actually did some traveling recently and picked up some interesting technology tips, didn't you?
Yeah, I was at HR Tech last week. HR Tech is a place where HR, human resources, technology, new stuff is displayed. And the conference, which has been going on for, I want to say, like 25 years, maybe. I don't know. I've been going since 2017 was my first year. Huh. And it's been so interesting to watch all the changes that are going on with how people are being managed at work, how talent, you know, people like us are being found and placed and rewarded and valued, and how much effort and emphasis companies are now placing on using artificial intelligence in every single part of the onboarding, life cycle maintenance, and offboarding of their employees.
How is AI being used?
Oh my gosh, every single sign had it, John, which is sort of funny. In our product, Best Money Moves, which is a financial wellness platform, we use it for search. We've trained the search just on our own information so that you're not getting hallucinations. You're getting really good, helpful answers no matter what you type into search. Some are using it to help find and cut back on the number of resumes they get. So people are using AI-generated resumes to apply for jobs, so now they can apply to 400 jobs at the same moment. And companies are being inundated with these. They have to get through them. And so they're on their side using artificial intelligence to sort through all these resumes to figure out who they would want.
I heard when this came up not that long ago, one listener said that their company monitors their participation in Zoom meetings and generates AI a report afterwards saying, how often were you looking on camera? What were your facial expressions like? How often did you participate? What was your kind of participation? A whole score sheet. That felt a little creepy to me.
Well, for people who are working from home, and so many people are not coming back to the office, companies need a way to sort of evaluate what your participation is, because there have been plenty of stories about people holding two and even three full-time jobs
from home
at the same time from home. So they want to make sure they're at least getting their 8 hours worth, or seven if you include a lunch hour. And so they're using it for that. But we're also seeing companies that are using artificial intelligence to answer phones and take over some of the drudgery that's associated with call centers. So I have actually tested technology that is so good, it had me ordering a pizza. And the only way I caught that it wasn't a real person, I mean, I knew I was testing artificial intelligence, is I asked it to put fried chicken wings on my pizza. And that didn't even elicit anything other than, and would you like fries with that, ma'am?
Right, right, right. And instead of, hey, wait a minute, are you kidding me? Seriously.
Right. Is that something you normally eat, is fried chicken wings?
Or guess what? We're not even going to do that.
That's right.
But so you were, was it a verbal communication?
Yeah, it was as if I was ordering over the phone.
And did it sound robotic, the voice?
No. You could not tell that this wasn't a real person, other than some of the answers were still a little wonky.
So it says, hello, Aurelio's Pizza. What can I do for you? And you say, hi, I want to order a pizza. And then it'll say, what size?
Yeah.
And this is all a computer recognizing the prompts.
Exactly. Recognizing that we're having a real conversation. So artificial intelligence has really, even in the last 2 years, John, has jumped so far, so fast, that it can handle many of these tasks that call center people do that are really needed to be done.
What do you say to the people that say, but now somebody doesn't have a job answering the phone at the pizza place?
What I would say is that there are a lot of jobs that need to be done that cannot yet be done by artificial intelligence. And we actually still have very low unemployment with a lot of jobs out there. So I think that what we need is for people to understand there's ways to learn to do new things and to retrain. I don't know that you'd ask anybody who's sitting in a call center all day if they love their job. Mm. Not sure you'd get a yes. So can we find something better for them to do?
My wireless printer wasn't working over the weekend, and I spent about a half hour on the phone with a guy who had an African voice. I asked him what his name was, and it was like Umbogwe. And and I'm not even making fun of it. I think that was his name, and I don't know where he was.
Yep.
But he was fantastic. He was a human being. Mm. And we got cut off 20 minutes into the thing. Boop. The call dropped. And then a few minutes later, he called me back and says, this is Umbogwe. I'm sorry, we lost you. And then he and I were on the phone for about 40 minutes. Maybe a computer could have done that for me. But Umbogwe was fantastic.
Well, I'll tell you, I went to a checkup at my doctor's, and the doctor, we were discussing, you know, some things that are you know, as I'm aging, some things that might happen. And he actually picked up his phone and talked into ChatGPT.
Really?
And asked it a question.
Really?
Yeah. And I was just like, wow. And it was a complicated, really, really complicated question about drug interactions. And it had an interesting answer. And so I think that we're going to see all these kinds of things, right? Because healthcare is certainly one of the top things that companies are providing.
Wow.
You're going to see more and more AI built into that.
Follow Elise Glink. She's the owner of ThinkGlink Media and Best Money Moves. ThinkGlink.com is a good click. Okay, Elise, thanks for coming into the studio today.
Nice to see you, John.
News is next on WGN. We were talking about how everybody is about food, either the grocery store or the restaurant. I think the holy grail of it is getting restaurant quality food delivered home. That's kind of the best of both worlds. It's not like food delivery is a new thing, but there's a new player on the field. Bill Stavro joins us now, the founder and CEO at foodhaul.com. Hey, Bill, this is John. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm great, John. Good to be here. Thanks.
You are there. I am here. And some the people you work with have hauled some food into our studio. It looks good. It is delicious. What's novel about the way you're delivering food?
Oh, yeah. So I'm glad that it's there and you get to enjoy it. What's novel about the way we're delivering food, there's a couple of things that are uniquely novel about it. A is that all of those meals that you're about to try or already have tried are signature dishes from very talented chefs, some of which you're probably familiar with. Fabio Viviani is an example, who's been a long time fixture in the culinary scene of Chicago. Christopher Dotson, who has a rich history of doing a variety of things, including just being on Beat Bobby Flay. And Federico Camacho, who I'm just going through the three items that others, right? We're a marketplace of these unique chefs and their signature dishes. And the uniqueness about it from a delivery perspective, which I think was your question, is that they're delivered to the consumer on demand and that they are also delivered refrigerated, so that you control the end product as opposed to the pretty clunky process of food delivery through one of the traditional channels.
But I'm not ordering then via Food Hall restaurant from a named restaurant, but rather you all are preparing unique menu items for me to order from. Is that right?
That is correct. So we have a centralized kitchen that produces these meals to the exact spec of the chefs and brands that we work with, their signature dishes. So, like, no different, like I said, than the ones you have. We follow their exact process. We add a little bit of food science of our own that allows for the reheating process to be optimized, and we deliver it direct to you. So it's a unique play on access. So a consumer would have access to someone like Jay Farley, who's based in Asheville, North Carolina, who's on our platform. And Jay would have a unique access to the consumer in the Chicago market. Right now we're strictly up and down the North Shore, but expanding rapidly.
Yeah, I guess that's the next question then, right? So I get it. I'll go online. I'll see what you have to offer. I can order it, but you're not delivering to everywhere in Chicago. You're North Shore and probably migrating south and west into this either the west side or the western suburbs?
So we are currently based. We have a brick-and-mortar store in downtown Wilmette,
right.
And from that location, we can service most of the North Shore. And uniquely, we have a couple of different channels that can get to direct-to-consumer, including, and maybe we'll get to that, satellite locations that will just be doing delivery and access consumers outside the delivery radius of one of our brick-and-mortar stores. But yes, we are currently in talks of doing a city location. Uniquely, we're also doing a location. It's kind of out of the box, I would assume you'd find, but we are, we just did a partnership with Market District, which is a grocery chain. It's a subsidiary of Giant Eagle, and it's their premium brand. We're going to be a store within a store at Market District, starting this fall. So our expansion is going to be in Carmel, Indiana, in the city of Chicago, and then expanding our delivery radius through kind of a non-traditional play on satellite locations, meaning a restaurant location would inventory our product and be able to get to a consumer in unique parts of the city on demand just through delivery, but not with a storefront.
I got it. Bill Stavros on a phone line, the founder and CEO at Food Hall. Foodhall.com is here. Is how you see and order this. So do you expect that people would be ordering food that they're going to eat that day or that evening, or they're going to order for the week? How do you expect folks will order the food?
Sure. So we expect people to order this as an on-demand product. We are another unique differentiator is that we are not a subscription-based meal prep platform, right, like some of the others that are out there. So we expect and we encourage our consumers, because the product comes to them fresh and we restock our shelves and our inventory on a daily basis, we encourage people to buy it and use it that day or in the near term, not necessarily stock their refrigerator with these items for a week. We think that's going to be the ideal flavor profile on each of those items and keeping it its freshest. We really are positioning ourselves in a way, and we're already up and running, by the way, but so we really want to position ourselves in a way where it's the best way to get carry out or delivery.
Yeah.
Not in place of a meal prep.
Well, you know, and I'm
thinking would either buy at the grocery store.
If you order pizza, you don't order the pizza and then eat it next Tuesday. You eat it right now. You want pizza. So if you're going to order these foods, ideally they would be prepared fresh, delivered fresh. Then I'm going to heat them up and it would be as close to the restaurant or the quality experience these chefs have generated. I will tell you, I have three plates of the food in front of me, and I was noshing on a little of it just before we went on the air. I had the Korean beef, the chicken scarparello, which, by the way, was maybe my favorite. The potatoes and the onions, the peppers, the sauce, the chicken. There was just the right amount of crisp, and the peppers, the tomato, the potatoes were heated all the way through. It wasn't overcooked. I don't know how you did all of that. Really, really good. The homemade gnocchi was really good as well. These are some of the items. What else is on the menu that folks order?
Sure. So we have more from Fabio Viviani. We do a chicken parmesan. That's his signature, his ultra signature meatballs. We do a fried rice from Christopher Dotson, a Thai curry salmon for Christopher Dotson. Rick Tremonto, who's been a great long-time chef in the Chicago market. We do a couple of barbecue items with him, a pork shoulder, wings. He has a couple items in development now, which is going to be a jambalaya. We have some exciting new chefs and new items that will be coming out soon. And that's actually a really unique piece of what we're going to be able to bring to these communities as well, is always something new.
Yeah.
We all experience living in a community for a long time, myself no different, where there's kind of a redundancy on a daily basis of what you're going to do. The same restaurants, even though you like them and you enjoy them, there's always a desire for something new and innovative. We're going to be able to bring that to these communities basically on a weekly basis, launching a new chef, launching a new item, and so on. So it's really interesting. We really think that we fit this very unique moment that I think resonates with everybody. It definitely resonates with me and my family, which is when you don't feel like cooking and you don't feel like going out, there's a compromise that comes with that experience, meaning I'm just going to get something to eat. If it's a carry out or it's a delivery, it's probably not going to be the quality that I wanted, but from a convenience standpoint, it meets that bar.
Yeah.
And we are exceeding that bar and taking the compromise out of that moment.
Right. So this is not just throwing your hands up and saying, oh, hell, we'll get pizza or that Chinese place and we'll get the number 27 item that we always get.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Dishes that you just would not imagine you would be ordering out and have delivered. And I can attest to that because they are beautiful, complex, rich dishes that were delivered to us here. And it seems like you guys have figured that out. We got to go, Bill, but how long have you been doing this food hall?
So food hall has been up and running for about 2 months. I, however, have been in food service from growing up in the restaurant business for over 30 years. So not new to the space, but food hall is our latest and newest innovation. And yeah, we're very excited about it. And thank you for having me.
Just like it sounds, foodhall.com. Bill Stavros, the founder and CEO. It's new. Good luck, Bill. Thanks for the food.
Absolutely. Enjoy it. Nice talking to you, John. Thank you.
I am. Speaking of food, we did a little while ago. Phil Stefani joins us now, the owner at Stefani Restaurant Group. Phil, you're back on WGN Radio. How are you today?
Yes. Very good. Thank you. Great, great, beautiful sunny day in Chicago today for our last day of September.
Yeah, no kidding. Boy, there it goes, and here it comes. What's new with you? What's new with you, by the way, Phil?
Well, we have an opening tonight and very excited about it. Obviously, it's a small little restaurant reopening called Tavern on Rush.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this when it closed, and then we also heard that you were going to move across the street. Just catch me up on where you are and what's going on.
Yeah. So, as you know, our lease ended back in October of 22. And so we were looking for new space, but the only place I really would look is Rush and Bellevue, where we were for 25 years. So we finally cut a deal with the Thompson Hotel and took over the old Nico space they had there. And so today we'll get the chance to bring back Tavern on Rush. The funny thing about it is that Tavern isn't about the brick and mortar. Tavern was about the patrons of 25 years who supported it, and then obviously my staff who served them. And this is why there's such excitement behind it, and people have been asking me the last 2 years, when are you going to open, when are you going to open? And the day has come, and tonight we will open. So
same face going to greet people?
Yes, we will be there. Benny will be there, who opened and closed the original tavern across the street. My family will be there. We're all going to be there.
Now, is this a private opening, or is it open to the public?
No, this is now open to the public.
You're looking for cash-paying customers, huh?
Cash-paying customers, right.
And for those
who decided against that 2,000 people event, because I felt that hundreds of thousands who should have been invited would never have made the list. So I figured, let's just open, and little by little, we'll get a chance to greet them all. So
it's funny, when restaurants open up, a lot of times they will do like a first night, almost beta test for the staff, but then they invite the media.
So we did our own mock service with our staff.
Yeah.
And we did a little showcase of, for the media, but I just felt that we could never handle the demand, because I've been getting texts all along, you know, make sure I'm on the list for the opening. Well, you know, you can only handle so many people. You know, it's not really Wrigley Field or the United Center. So,
well, those
so
things
I
always
really
look like
pull that off.
What a cash drain so, those things looked for me too. Because when you do the media thing, they eat and drink you to death if they can.
Yeah, absolutely. You're correct there. So,
so for those who don't know Tavern on Rush, what's the specialty? What's the menu? Just give us a couple of items off the top of your
head. Sure. And like I said, Tavern was made by people. People decide what what direction that restaurant should go in. So we're a steakhouse, you know, so we serve prime steaks. We have our seafood component. So we have the branzino, the Dover sole, the salmon, and so forth. We're doing the seafood fountains and whatnot. And then we go into some specials. We have three pastas from, you know, my 44 years of making pasta. I think I can figure that one out. And then we're making like a pork shank and a chicken with jalapeno and so forth. And the menu will constantly change along with a great cocktail and wine list.
Tavern on Rush is back. First seating, as I understand it, starts at 3 today.
4 o'clock today.
4 o'clock. Today. All right. So maybe get in line at 3. Do I have to make reservations, or you think I can walk in today, Phil?
No, no. I think today is strictly, we're going to, for the next few days, is going to be strictly reservations. We're also going to control the crowd from the standpoint that we want the staff to give the proper service.
Yeah.
So it can't all be about the cash. It's all we would like to do is, you know, take in all this cash, but it's not about that. I want the staff to be, you know, have the time to treat their customers fairly and good. So we'll pace it in until they get up to speed, and then we'll start running. So,
all right. Well, I think they know how to run. Phil Stefani over at StefaniRestaurants.com, StefaniRestaurants.com, Tavern on Rush. Today's the day. Nice to talk to you again, Phil.
Great. Thank you again.